Welcome into the Talkin' Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. I am Chase Goodbread, the sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, joined by longtime Alabama football analyst Travis Ryer. Be sure to like and subscribe to that Ryer on YouTube channel. Lots of good content there. A lot of it Alabama related. Some of it not. Some of it SEC centric, but it's all great stuff with that Ryer on YouTube channel. The Iron Bowl recap coming at you. We're going to talk about these new CFP rankings just revealed minutes ago. Travis, fresh off the press with the CFP committee. We'll preview one or two of these conference championship games upcoming this weekend. But Travis, first, of course, the Iron Bowl in the books. Alabama gets the job done at home, 28-14, the final score. The Crimson Tide in command early and pretty much stayed in command of this one. Gave up a touchdown late in the game. But really, as long as we're talking about the CFP in this edition, one of the things they like to talk about, or at least used to like to talk about, was, quote, game control. Remember that phrase?
Yes.
In that regard, I thought Alabama had a lot of game control in this one.
Yeah, and you wonder what it could have been if Alabama had not turned the football over four times, man. You go back over those last six quarters, that had been a real friend of the Alabama football team up until really the second half of Oklahoma was turnover margin, taking care of the football, taking the football away. But these last six quarters haven't been so good. But still, to overcome that defensive efficiency, I guess, in the red zone, also doing a pretty good job on third and fourth downs, or inefficiency where Auburn's concerned. I know Auburn's probably looking at it from that standpoint, but good enough in those sort of situational areas. And then to still get big numbers from Jalen Milroe. Jeremy Bernard, I thought, was outstanding. And look, if Jalen has those type of numbers, even with two or three turnovers mixed in, Alabama's typically going to be okay, Chase.
Yeah, Milroe had a big game on the ground, no doubt about it. Started with a big touchdown run early in the game. Turned the corner on one DeMarcus Riddick, who made himself a bit of a goat in that one, Travis. We could touch on that as well. Also, a little fracas broke out on the Auburn sideline in this one. The likes of Witt, you know, you always see some pushing and shoving in the Iron Bowl. Not sure I remember the last time I saw anything quite that out of control. I'm sure it's happened. Just can't recall it off the top of my head. That was pretty wild. So, yeah, a lot to get into. We'll touch on all that. Starting with the offense, though, as you brought up, Jalen Milroe, 18 out of 24, 256 yards. He did throw an interception in this game, but effective on the ground, as we said, 17 for 104, three rushing scores for him. And also of big note for the offense, Travis, what's with 28 carries for Jam Miller? Where did that come from? I mean, that's a huge plate for any Alabama running back this year.
Yeah, maybe that goes back to what you talked about earlier, being able to control the game a little bit. When you look at the numbers, they don't blow you away. 84 rushing yards, just a three-yard average. Combined, you had 35 carries between Jam and Justice Haynes for 104 yards. So took two running backs, 35 carries to get you to 104 yards. It took half of that for Jalen Milroe to get you to that same rushing total by himself of 104 yards. And, you know, the explosive runs just really haven't been a big thing for the Alabama run game, I think, especially in SEC play. But I love Jam Miller's approach. I love his physicality. I feel secure with him in the game. Not that Justice didn't do some good things in spots, but it's a quarterback-driven offense. And I think in a lot of ways you can say it's a quarterback-driven team. Now, that's something else we haven't seen as much of. I guess Bryce Young was a little bit this way in 2021, maybe even 2022 in terms of how he went, Alabama went. But it's been even more the case, it seems like, with Jalen Milroe this year.
Yeah, they stayed in front of the sticks better than we've seen them do in a lot of games this season. And that's you know, as you know, not a lot of explosiveness in 28 for 84, but if you're keeping yourself in manageable situations, more third and threes instead of third and eights, through that running game, you see better results, again, notwithstanding the turnovers.
Yeah, 12 of 18 on third down. And we talked about this last week. They were third and on average 12 yards to go in Norman. And they still converted 7 of 14. That's a hell of a percentage when you talk about that type of number you needed to make on an average basis. Against Auburn, it was half that, I think. I think it was 3rd and 6 yards to go was their average. First down, they were more effective. And I thought defensively they did a better job of kind of putting Auburn behind the sticks more. Auburn had some mistakes, I think, that played into that as well. But something they didn't do on either side of the ball at Oklahoma the previous week, they were much more effective with against Auburn.
Jeremy Bernard, big day, 7 for 111 receiving, impressive for sure. I thought he looked as sharp as he's looked all year. He made some yards after the catch that I thought were pretty impressive in a couple of moments. But something we talked about in the last podcast, Travis, I think, and maybe for a couple of podcasts now, is that the wide receiving core has really boiled down to two guys. There were only two wide receivers that caught a ball for Alabama, Ryan Williams and Jeremy Bernard. Less and less action for, at least in terms of targets. Right, other receivers are getting on the field, but in terms of targets, just few and far between anywhere else. Sometimes I wonder what that's a function of, but I also it speaks to a little bit of breaking news, Travis, just as hot as the CFP rankings, Kobe Prentice entering that transfer portal.
Yeah, I you're probably this way too, Chase. Not the biggest surprise, kind of given how that rotation had played out throughout the course of the season. Really, Cole Adams had emerged as that inside guy. Then he goes out with an injury and you're thinking, boy, this is Kobe Prentice time. And initially, right on the heels of that, that was the guy that they sort of went to there. But from that point forward, I mean, we saw Caleb Odom again early in the game on Saturday. Kendrick Law, obviously, in that mix. Emmanuel Henderson. You know, some of these other wide receivers, too. The skill guys in general, once this season is complete, I'm going to be interested to see how much more fallout there's going to be. Because I think between certainly running back, wide receiver, perhaps, maybe even quarterback, in this era, not just at Alabama, but when you go into an offseason with just skill guys, you know, quarterback, wide receiver, running back, I think you're looking at 5 or 6 minimum now. Just about every offseason you can look at turning over. But, you know, Kobe's got speed. Kobe, I don't think, will have a problem finding suitors. Hopefully he finds a fit like Ja'Cory Brooks did. I mean, Ja'Cory Brooks went to Louisville. People I don't think have even noticed. He's like a 1,000-yard receiver this year. Mm-hmm. For Louisville. So, you know, you hope for Kobe it works out well. But again, you know, you're right. It's been Ryan and Jeremy. And I thought Jeremy, like you, was great, not only in terms of big catches at big moments. I like that on some of those plays, he finished the play. He didn't look to step out bounds. He tried to get as much as he could get out of every reception.
Tough player. Yeah. No question about it. Starting right now, as long as we're on the portal topic, starting right now and over the course of the next 4 to 5 weeks, whenever the portal closes, this is where Courtney Morgan makes that money, right? You're the general manager. Obviously he's spent a lot of time already identifying guys, but mm-hmm. this is kind of Super Bowl time, right? For Courtney Morgan.
It's like a waiver wire almost, you know, it's free agency. NFL, hey, I'm sure he's got, you know, plenty of people working under his guidance that are scouring situations. Or forget about what we know about the portal. Think about what these folks know before we even know.
Sure.
About the portal, about guys on the move. I say that about Kobe Prentice, hopefully finding a spot. For all we know, he already has a spot because guys actually can designate now do not contact, because as soon as they go in the portal, they know exactly where they're going. And also Alabama tomorrow, right, expected to land a top three recruiting class,
right,
for the 2025 cycle. How much have we just forgotten about that? You know, I mean, pre-portal, pre-all this stuff, we would be thinking about tomorrow as a huge, huge day, and it is, but it has lost a lot of its impact because of the looming presence of the transfer portal.
Out of 20, and I know not it's 25 in the number across every school every year, but, and of course they got that second signing day and the old February date where sometimes you pick up one or two more, but just for a round number. On the average college football team, Travis, out of 25 guys in a given signing class, how many can a coach expect to be there 4 years later with the portal the way it is now? Five? Eight?
At most, I would split it right down the middle.
Yeah. Right?
At the most, I would say
more than five. That's too low.
I would say you would hope 10 a class.
Yeah.
Because if you had 10, that over a 4 year period, that's 40. So, right. You know, that's
half a roster.
Yeah. If you can, and those would be your core guys. I think realistically, though, you're looking at more 7 or 8.
Yeah.
I think you're looking at 30, 35, because if a guy's a top 40 guy, but he's down in that 38 to 40 range,
right?
That means he can probably go start a lot of other places. And maybe his NIL's better. Maybe all those things are better. So it's that's a big reason why we don't talk about it as much, because our expectation is, well, hell, you know, more than half these guys are going to be gone after a couple of years. So
yeah.
Why spend as much time on it as we used to? Hey, we got a lot of folks in the show chat, by the way. Chase Goodbread, Rising Tide checking in. Ask, how's it going? Going good, Rising Tide. Little Joe C. Good evening, fellas. Always like hearing from Little Joe C. Jack gets right to the point, Chase. How in the hell did we win that game with four turnovers?
Defense. I mean,
yeah.
You know, you talk about how the score could have been a lot worse had it not been for those four turnovers, and there's no question about that. But the defense turned it on. I mean, you give up four turnovers on offense. Defense only gives up one touchdown. They played fantastic. And you know what? The red zone is very, very important, but it's also an arbitrary marker on the field, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it happened against Oklahoma. I think it happened against Auburn as well. Team drives down inside the 30 and doesn't get anywhere, doesn't score a touchdown, or you force a field goal. That's big for the defense too, and it doesn't even count on any red zone numbers. You see that too.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before. The only number I look at with red zone offense and defense is touchdown conversion.
That's it.
I don't care. You know, you see teams that are 100% in the red zone, and, you know, on 10 attempts, they've kicked 6 field goals.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that's losing. That's actually losing. That's a losing stat. But, yeah, I mean, Alabama, what, 4 trips to the red zone against Auburn, 4 touchdowns. Donald checking in here. He echoes the sentiment, Chase. Hard to imagine the insanity of trying to manage the portal, recruit your roster, and new players. That's why they make the big bucks. That's why these GMs like Courtney Morgan are going to be the next million-dollar staffers in college football, because every program is going to have a Courtney Morgan, and they're going to have to be damn good at their job, because they're gonna feel that same type of pressure that the on-the-field folks do, I think, Chase.
People snickered when Herm Edwards was the coach at Arizona State and said, I'm hiring a GM.
Yeah.
Now everybody's got one.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember if that was pre-portal or post-portal, you know, when it started. But yeah, that GM position is huge now. I mean, and of course, it's still the coaching staff that's got to do the recruiting. It's still the brand. It's still the NIL that's got to write the checks. But if you're the guy who's identifying who's out there, who the coaching staff should go after, there's not a more important job off the field.
No, and you know, that's, again, you're going to see it in the salaries of those folks. And my hope is a lot of the support staff people get a cut of this pie moving forward. Now that it's sort of been, the curtain's been pulled back on everything that goes into that part of it, you know, from a support staff perspective. And because I know a lot of folks that have been in on that stuff. And when you average out the hours per day, not just in June for official visits, but year round, You know, it's 15, 17 hours a day. You know, they're making 50, 60K. But hey, buy the ticket. You take the ride. Donald says he agrees too about the GM, says the pressure is going to be like the NFL GM. And that's part of it too, the notoriety now that comes with the job. You know, the one benefit I would say previously was those folks flew under the radar. So if it went bad, you know, they didn't really feel the brunt of it from that standpoint. But now it's very public in terms of the position.
Yeah, the key difference in terms of hierarchy with that GM now, you know, Donald points out the NFL similarity. In the NFL, the hierarchy goes owner, GM, coach, top to bottom. Yeah. And in college, it goes AD, coach, GM.
Yeah.
So that's the only that's a key difference, I guess.
No, it is for sure. We're not at that point yet. I know that what. At Stanford, though, with Andrew Luck going in there, there's talk that that structure will be more along the lines of AD, Andrew Luck, coach. Like, seriously, he's going to be – I mean, essentially, he's going to be the AD for football.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And – but, you know, like Nick Saban. Nick Saban was kind of like Bill Belichick at college. He was his own GM and head coach. And that's what – head coaches NFL used to pine for. They wanted that control. Bill Parcells with the quote we all go back to, if they're going to let you cook the meal, they ought to at least let you buy
the groceries. Yeah.
Well, I think it's gotten so crazy though in college football. I think a lot of these guys, these coaches realize I can't do all the shopping and all the inventory and all the accounting and keep the checkbook and do all those things and coach this football team. The smart ones have figured it out anyway.
And deal with all the personal stuff, the discipline stuff, the you know, this player's got this, this player's got that. It's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah.
If I'm going to do that, I'll just go do it in the NFL if I can. Right. Yeah. I mean, and then I cut about half of that out.
Yeah. I went to, and some coaches, you know, some coaches are big on getting to know guys on a granular level, right? How's your mom? How's your dad? Bobby Bowden was that. It was definitely that type. Some aren't. I went to Stillwater years ago when I was working for NFL.com to do a feature story on one of their draft prospects. And I was in Mike Gundy's office and I asked him, tell me about your personal relationship with this guy I'm writing. He's like, don't have one. You know, I mean, he's straight ball coach and that's it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a balance to be had. Like if you're putting together a staff, especially you need some of those hardcore football guys. But I think you need some personality too, you know, and some of that dynamic that can help in the room when you need it, because I know a team right now that we both pull for in Northeast Florida doesn't seem like they have much of that right now. Speaking of fights, right? I was there for that one Sunday. Ding, ding. You could hear the bell go off.
A lot of melees going on over there.
It was a melee weekend. You had it for the plant the flaggers. You had the
Ohio State, Michigan. Florida State.
And then Sunday with Trevor Lawrence getting KO'd.
NC State, UNC had a
planter. Yes. They're the planters. They're everywhere, man.
A little bit more on Alabama's defense in this game, Travis, and then we'll get on to the CFP. Big, big night for Malachi Moore in the secondary. He had three pass breakups, Travis, and all three of them came on third and longs. Had a third and eight, a third and nine, and a third and 15. Can't ask for better timing than that. Also of note, Justin Jefferson steps in at the mic for Deontay Lawson. First time starting in that role. Had the green dot with the communications with Kane Womack. How did you see him handling that?
It seemed fine. You know, again, I think one of the biggest issues you have with Deontay's injury is that it limits now what you can do with Jihad. I mean, and you're playing Jamarion Latham a lot at the Wolf. That's a tough ask of really a 3-4 defensive end.
Right.
And Jamarion, I give him a lot of credit for taking it on. Looks like Yonzi Pierre's dealing with something, a knee. So he's trying to give you something to go along with Quay Rousseau. But yeah, I thought you said it about Malachi. That was an impressive performance for him. And, you know, I thought the big thing about the third quarter jumping out 28-6 was that effectively took Jarquez Hunter out of the game, at least as a runner. Right. You still let him throw it, though. What in the hell?
You throw it to him, Hugh. You throw it to him.
Talk about a fireable offense. 28-14, you've got the ball. There's still 12 minutes to go.
Yeah.
I think they were in plus territory. And you never go full Malzahn. You never go full Malzahn, ever. And he went full Malzahn with a double pass from Jarquez. I mean, Malachi almost had to – was Malachi, right, on that pick? I mean, had to damn near fair catch it, you know?
There were three guys there, too. Hey. It's not like it was a 50-50 ball. It was a 10-90 ball with all the traffic.
And they had, like, three guys out there with him to just basically tell you, okay, we're going to protect Jarquez so he can launch this baby,
right?
You know? If you're going to throw the double pass, and you obviously gave a little nod to Oklahoma, like you watched the Oklahoma game and you saw that double pass, it was wide ass open.
Mm-hmm.
But then you don't really run it like Oklahoma ran it, you know?
No, you run it
to a receiver across the field.
And twice, three times as far as the OU double pass.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Not a good look for Hugh Freeze at all.
Brutal.
Bray Hubbard with another pick. Boy, I don't have the cumulative stats in front of me. I would assume he leads a team in picks at this point, doesn't he, Travis? Or close to it?
Be up there. Yeah. He's got to be up there. I think, what is that, three or four now?
At least. At least. So he's definitely developing, looking good.
It was great to not have to really worry about Jarquez Hunter as a runner in the second half. I think he had 10 for 55 in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
And the second half, I think he only had like 3 for a yard
as
a runner. So,
yeah, Xavier Brown's got 3 or 4 now, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Xavier's eyes can still deceive him a little bit, like they did on the touchdown there in the second half. But I'll say this for the true freshman, he typically responds, you know, he doesn't go fetal.
He's got that short memory.
And he makes plays just like Georgia. You know, he got torched a good bit, but then at the end of the game, he made the play. Kind of the same thing against Auburn Saturday.
All right, the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Moving on to the college football playoff rankings reveal. As we record, that basically just happened, Travis. I will zip it down very quickly, and then we'll, of course, discuss Alabama's place in it. With only conference championship games remaining this weekend, here's where it sits. Oregon won. Then it goes Texas, Penn State, Notre Dame, Georgia, Ohio State, Tennessee, SMU, Indiana, Boise State sitting at 10, Alabama at 11, Miami 12, and then to continue on out to Clemson, which is relevant to our conversation, Ole Miss 13, South Carolina is at 14, Arizona State 15, Iowa State 16, and those Clemson Tigers sitting at 17. Travis, Alabama fans have to be excited about what they saw tonight, and you never know what this committee is going to do, especially with a new format like this. It's three times as big as the old one going 12 teams, but as a three-loss team, Alabama can't ask to be sitting any better than where they're sitting at 11.
No, especially just two Saturdays after getting blown out by a 6-6 team on the road, you know, to still have a pulse. But it is a body of work situation. It is a 12-team situation. Because prior to this year, you would be wondering about pecking order for a Florida game, right, in the bowls.
Right.
Or maybe you're going to Vegas or Texas or something like that.
Tampa.
Yeah, I think it laid out exactly the way an Alabama fan wanted to, including SMU. Mm-hmm. Because SMU sitting there at 8, if I'm an SMU fan, I'm not comfortable about the whole, well, we can lose Saturday night and still get in as a second ACC team. I think if you were 4th or 3rd or something like that, like you could probably feel that way, maybe even like what Georgia feels right now about Saturday in the SEC championship game. But I think the ACC is a one-bid league. And I felt this way even before tonight's rankings. If if South Carolina would be was 11 or Ole Miss was 11, I'd still say the ACC is a one bid league. I don't give a damn what happens in Charlotte Saturday night. I don't care who wins that game. Winner of that game is in. Winner of that game should be out, just like Miami's out now. You know, to me, that's the way it should go. When you talk about resumes, there are none. The loser of, to me, of SMU Clemson doesn't have a resume because neither will have a win over a top 25 team
right
this season. And by the way, I'm expecting Clemson to win that game Saturday night. So
you've called that. Yeah.
I feel strongly about that. I've had that rebutted on X. I enjoy that. I enjoy the banner, but I think Clemson's defensive line is going to show SMU that it's still a little G5-ish. You know, this is still a program that's 1 year removed from G5. I mean, this is an AAC team, really. And I think Clemson's not what it was 5, 6, 7 years ago, obviously, but it still can control the game with its defensive line. It's got a physical back in Maffa, and Kate Klubnik's been playing pretty good football this year. So I think Clemson will win that game. And then it becomes, are you really going to put two ACC teams in and only three SEC teams? And meanwhile, the Big Ten's sitting over here quiet as church mice right now because they know they've got three teams who don't have much of a resume either, but they're getting four in. Mm-hmm. So you won't hear a word from the Big Ten about any because they're good.
Right.
But they've got three teams right now that you can look at their resumes, Ohio State, Penn State, and Indiana, and go, what are we talking about here, really? I mean, at the end of the day.
Almost everybody looks beatable. Even Oregon, I think, is beatable. I mean, I don't see any – this is not
Oregon beat Ohio State by a point in Eugene, right? I mean, that's – And Oregon's in the Big Ten, but it's like they're still in the Pac-12 because we don't hear anything from Oregon over here, you know, other than the Ohio State game. I mean, narrowly beat Boise at home. But I get it. The Big Ten's in great shape with four. So don't make any – hopefully they won't notice us over here. That's what it feels like.
They like where they're sitting. There's no doubt about it.
But if they're getting four, then the SEC should get four. And if the SEC doesn't get four, it'll be interesting to hear what Greg Sankey says about the future of the SEC's involvement. It would be a shame to
Greg.
See
this Greg event. Greg can be a bit of a foreshadower with some of those comments. You know, no question.
We hope that in the future we can still be a part of this event.
I can't put my hat in my hand because I got my headset over my hat. But I've been saying for weeks, and I'll just hold my hand up. It looks like I was wrong. I didn't think a three-loss team was going to get into this part.
No, you were adamant. I was with you a week ago.
Yeah. Well, shit. You had chaos in week 13. And you had enough chaos in week 14 with Miami getting beat and a couple other games to where this thing is kind of opened the door. I mean, you got to have
the ACC thought it was being slick, though, without scheduling. Right.
Right.
Miami, Clemson. And really, I think the thinking was FSU, but FSU kind of has to play Miami. So they couldn't really get around that one. Mm-hmm. But it worked out where SMU didn't play Clemson or Miami until this week. But when you look at who SMU has played this year, now look, like I said, 5 wins over, you know, 7 plus win teams. So there is that for SMU, but you know, one ranked opponent to this point, and that was a loss at home to BYU.
Going to be a lot of SMU fans in Tuscaloosa on Saturday night, 7 p.m.
It's weird because I don't think they belong in either. Even if they win, I don't think they belong in. But they're in. I mean, somebody has to go from the ACC.
You know? Somebody's got to go. I think and somebody's got to go from the Big 12, which we haven't even really talked about.
That's the thing, too. And think about some of these, you know, Boise State potentially getting a damn bye. to the four? What the hell are we talking about here? I mean, how stupid do they think we are?
Tweaks. Yeah. Tweaks afoot, Travis, to the four. Tweaks are coming.
There's going to be tweaks. There's going to be tweaks. Like when Nikki put the guy's head in a vice in the casino.
Don't make me do this.
That's Sankey. Sankey's going to be on that vice with that CFP.
Charlie M?
Give me a name.
Charlie M. Oh, he told that Frankie, he said, if this guy doesn't give me a name soon, Frankie, I'm going to give him yours, he said.
Oh, don't give
Frankie
us a
Frankie didn't like that.
No. Frankie would wave that finger at you. Don't give us a reason to go casino here on the show, because we'll do all of casino.
Yeah, we could extend this thing a long time with that one.
Sankey's going to have that vice, you know.
Already kind of hit on that ACC game. You like Clemson to win, Travis. I think I probably like Clemson to win that game too. Although, like you, I could still see the committee giving the ACC just one bid, bouncing SMU based on resume, keeping Alabama in. But if SMU pulls that thing off, Alabama's a lock, like a total lock, at least from where I'm sitting. So a lot of SMU fans among Alabama fans this weekend. And the other game we'll touch on before we close things out, Travis, of course, the SEC championship game. Alabama fans certainly rooting for Georgia in that one, I think, right? Put a little bit more shine on that head-to-head win, strength of schedule-wise, to beat Texas. And again,
I guess that could have gone both ways, though, because if Georgia loses to Georgia Tech and then loses to Texas, they're obviously out. In Alabama, that kind of opens it up for Alabama more. But it didn't hurt. You're right that Georgia did win. At least from that perspective, it does help Alabama.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, if Georgia had lost to Tech and then caught a fourth loss in the conference title game, they're bounced. They're gone. Yeah.
But I think Georgia's beating Texas too. I'm on record with that. I've been just hot takes arama lately.
All right.
I think Georgia beats Texas and Alabama ends up going to Austin.
Instead of the TV projection was Notre Dame, you think it's Austin.
Because the TV projection was with Texas, I think, winning Saturday. I think Georgia's winning.
Right.
And I think Texas will end up hosting a first-round game against the Crimson Tide. Go ahead and get those conference. They'll probably want to get those conference matchups out of the way, I would think, in the early rounds. Although, the potential for an Alabama at Notre Dame, oof.
Right.
On campus. Yeah, Donald Andrews here in the chat. Wow, big hot take, Travis. Yeah. I got lots of mo. In the words of Apollo Creed, Donald. Dexter agrees, though. My man Dex has got me. He's got me.
Alabama, Texas. Jalen Milroe have to be watching for that trap corner this time, right?
Oh, no. Still too soon for that one, Chase. Trap corner. Yeah.
That is going to do it for this edition of the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. For Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread, the sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News. We'll be back with you again next week right here on Talking Tide.